So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, the book that we're going to talk about next, it's called the Notorious Isaac Earle and His Scouts, Union Soldiers, Prisoners, Spies. The author, Gordon Olson, who's going to be joining us, or is joining us right now. When I finished reading that book, and I thought, oh my goodness me, this could be one heck of a movie, and it involves our Wisconsin Civil War group, and the group led by Isaac Earle. And so it's a real pleasure for me to have an opportunity to visit with Gordon Olson. He is the Grand Rapids, Michigan City Historian Emeritus and the author of and editor of many local history books, and also the author of The Civil War History, The Notorious Isaac Earle and His Scouts, Union Soldiers, Prisoners, Spies. He joins us from the studios of WGVU on the campus of Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Great to have him along. Gordon Olson, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Gordon, are you there? We're having a little trouble getting him. Let's see. Not quite sure what our problem is right now, but we'll get that problem resolved here in a minute. The book, again, is about Isaac Earle, and this is a different part of the war than we are used to hearing about. You know, with the large armies were engaged in epic battles, I think mostly on the Eastern Theater of the Civil War. The story of Isaac Earle unfolds in the West along the Mississippi River. He and his scouts were part of an occupational army, and they were worked along the Mississippi River aboard their own steamboat. They patrolled the river.
Got anything to read?
You know what's happening? He can hear me, but I can't hear him right now.
They still make magazines.
So that's our problem right now. He can hear me, but I can't hear. I can hear him, but he can't hear me. Let's put it that way. So we're going to work on that. Maybe we'll get him on by phone, and we can do it that way. Judith, I'm sure, is working on that right now. And so anyway, I'm going to fill you in on what kind of what happened with him. He was part of a group, scouts. They were sort of like an occupation army, and they had a steamboat, and they patrolled the river, essentially the Mississippi River, essentially from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to the White River in East Central Arkansas, and they gathered information about Confederate troop activity. They pursued and arrested rebel guerrillas and smugglers who shot at passing vessels. Planted mines in the river. They smuggled, they worked against people who smuggled cotton and commercial goods. They went after Confederate mail and soldiers across the great Mississippi River. And it was Major General Edward Canby, who was, he was chief of the Union Army's military division of the West Mississippi. And he formed this group of scouts to actually do this work. And it was in June of 1864. So obviously the war had been on for quite a long time. And they selected Lieutenant Isaac Earle to lead the group. And Earle had enlisted, he'd been in the service for quite a while already. He enlisted in 1861 in response to President Lincoln's first call for volunteers. And he really demonstrated a lot of courage and leadership skills. He served with the Union Army in Maryland, Louisiana, and Mississippi. And he turned to the 4th Wisconsin and recruited 30 experienced veterans together with about a dozen Southern civilians to be part of his Civil War equivalent. And the equivalent was of essentially a special forces unit, what we might call a special forces unit. And the story that you are going to read if you get a copy of his book, and what we'll hear about if we can ever get Gordon Olson on with us, is absolutely fascinating. He captured along the way more than 200 prisoners, and he also captured all kinds of cotton. At the time, cotton was being smuggled from the south to the north, and also there were other goods were coming from the north to the south, and this was, of course, totally illegal, and there were many, many people who made money and made a lot of money on this process. And so they made a lot of money, and the whole idea was to stop that activity, which was totally illegal. And a lot of people didn't want that to stop. But Isaac Earle and his scouts went ahead and fought it, and they really came up with goods and uncovered or recovered, I guess you could say, goods valued at the time at more than $1 million, And if you think about 1864 and $1 million in 1864 dollars, I'm not sure what that amount would be today, but this is the story. And Isaac Earle was captured a couple times. He was managed to escape from the Confederacy in the South a couple different times. He captured a lot of people himself. And Gordon Olson actually writes this story and bases it on soldiers' letters. He looked at diaries. He looked at memoirs. He had U.S. and Confederate government documents and publications, North and South newspapers. He looked at veterans' pension files. He looked at other scholarly publications. And kind of through these official documents, he was able to put together this book, and really in a lot in the soldier's own words. So I know James McPherson, who is a Civil War historian, called this a very important perspective on the Civil War itself. And we're trying to get him on. I'm hoping that we could phone him and get him on by telephone, but we seem to be having some problems with that. But I'm hoping that we'll be able to get that taken care of in the next few minutes. While he was doing all this, I'm telling you, Gordon Olson does a fantastic job of describing how these events went down. While he was doing all this, he meets a woman. Her name was Jane O'Neill, and he meets her. She was in the South at the time and really was a spy for the North. And so he starts he starts seeing her, as a matter of fact, in between his tearing around the countryside, breaking up all these various cartels and capturing federal soldiers and so forth. He actually starts a kind of a liaison with her. At first, I think it started because they had both had sort of they were both in the same business. She was trying to help the the North, and obviously he was working with the North, and so they worked together for a while. But then things sort of went from there, and they developed a romantic attachment. And so not only do we have this swashbuckling guy who is capturing Confederates, mm-hmm. he's capturing all kinds, tons, literally, of cotton that were coming, that was to go from the South to the North illegally. And then also he's trying, and he's also trying to do some other things as well in terms of the Northern things that were going to the South. He's trying to block that as well. So he's got a lot going on here. And let's see now. I might have him on. Gordon Olson, are you there?
The New York Philharmonic.
No, we're not getting it. So tell you what, I'm thinking we're going to keep working on this, and we will get him on over the break. We're going to take a little break for a look at the news, the weather, and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But I really want to talk about this. Isaac Earle and his scouts. It's a Wisconsin story, a Wisconsin Civil War story. Maybe you've heard about Isaac Earle and his scouts. If not, what would you like to know? Are you familiar with what went on in the Western Front of the Civil War? We'll take your calls, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, and we will be back, and hopefully we'll have a chat with Gordon Olson right after the news. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look today at a book about a bunch of Wisconsin guys who worked during the Civil War, were soldiers, and in particular, Gordon Olson has written a book called The Notorious Isaac Earle and His Scouts, Union Soldiers, Prisoners, and Spies. And I had about 15 minutes to talk with you about the book beforehand, but you know what? He can do a whole lot better job than I can. So let's hear from him right now. Gordon Olson, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Pleasure to join you, Larry.
I'm sorry for the follow-up here, but it's great to have you along. And I have lots of praise for you and for the book.
Thank you.
I said at the beginning that when I finished the book, I thought, oh my goodness me, this would make such a wonderful movie.
I've had others say the same thing, and I believe it myself. And all I have to do is find someone who agrees in Hollywood.
Well, I tell you, this guy, Isaac Earle, unbelievable character and person it would make for a great story. How did you learn the story of Isaac Earle?
Well, it goes back a long way, longer perhaps than I care to admit. But when I was a graduate student, I did my master's thesis on Isaac Earle and the Scouts, and I did that because my advisor came to me one day and he said, "Have you picked a topic yet?" He knew I hadn't, and I said, "No, of course." And he said, "Well, I got one." He had gotten the memoir of one of the scouts into the historical collections at the State University at River Falls, now part of the university system. And he said, "This is a story worth telling." So I began research then, got the master's degree, went on, did some other graduate work. But always in the back of my head was, I want to go back, and that story deserves a lot more than a master's thesis. And I kept telling people, and finally my best friend said to me, "If you don't shut up," or basically said, "Shut up and do the book." And I finally did after I retired. So it's 40 years later, but finally the book is out.
Man, am I glad you did. This is a story that we really haven't read about, or at least I haven't read about. And I've read a lot of books about the Civil War, but this is something different.
A few people knew about it. There's a fellow named Mike Martin who did a history of the 4th Wisconsin Cavalry, And Mike included them in his book, of course. But he agreed. He said, you know, they deserve their own book. And I'll tell you how well known they are, were and still are. I did a program in Natchez, Mississippi last spring when the book first came out. And I looked over an audience of about 50 people, and I got all through and did the standard of any questions. And immediately two hands went up in the audience. And the first hand I called on the woman, she said, I'm here tonight because I've been hearing about Isaac Earle. Or Isaac Earle has been in my family's history for 150 years, and I wanted to know more about him. It turned out his scouts had raided her family's plantation, and the family still didn't like it very much.
150 years later.
150 years. And the other woman in the audience said the same thing. She said, well, he raided my house and disrupted my family and arrested two of the women in the family, and I don't like him. And since I've heard from a third person from the area whose family history includes the Isaac Earle story. So he's known, but this is the first book-length treatment by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, he has obviously Wisconsin connections, and how did he come to enlist?
Well, right at the beginning of the Civil War, the first thing that happened after Fort Sumter was President Lincoln sent out a call for volunteers, and states across the North responded. And in the first group to respond from Wisconsin was which was just a few weeks later, was the 4th Wisconsin Infantry at that point. And Isaac Earle, who was from the Wisconsin Dells area, a place called Kilbourne City, which is, I think, now Wisconsin Dells, was part of a group called the Columbia Rifles. They've been training a little bit. They volunteered immediately, made their way to Milwaukee, and then on down to Racine, where they trained. They volunteered in, I think it was May, and by July they were in Maryland and engaged in battle.
Yeah, and then he winds up though along the Mississippi River.
Exactly. The Union had always had a plan, even before there was war, that one of the keys would be to divide the Confederacy by holding the Mississippi River. And so they set out on that very quickly. It's where ultimately Ulysses Grant made his reputation. But before long, those Wisconsin boys were all put on a ocean-going vessel and taken down into the Gulf of Mexico. In May of 1862, the war has only been going for a year, they successfully were part of the successful invasion up the Mississippi to seize New Orleans. And then they kept going. They continued to fight. Ultimately, Earle really comes to everyone's attention for his courage at a place called Port Hudson in 1863, which was captured the same time that Vicksburg was. And when those two places fell, the Mississippi, as Abraham Lincoln said at the time, the Mississippi flows unvexed to the sea, and that meant that the Union had control of that great river in its transportation routes, and it had successfully divided the Confederacy.
And Major Canby was the guy? I was trying to remember that.
Major General Canby.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, he was West Point. He had fought in some very interesting places: the Seminole War in Florida. He'd been in Mexico during the Mexican War. He had fought against Navajo in the West. And at one point, he was even engaged in a little conflict with the Mormons out in Utah. He understood what we would call irregular and small war, and he's the one who gets the credit for organizing a group of 30 men, finding the best veterans he could, putting them in the command of a known soldier who was a very active and a very spontaneous kind of soldier, and then gave them the very best weaponry he possibly could and said, now you are to go out there and you're going to be the anti-insurrectionary force. Today we would call them special operations. There's no two ways about it. These are the guys whose job it was to chase after the guerrillas and the outlaws and everyone, keep them away from the river and keep the river open.
And boy, was he successful.
Certainly
30
was.
Guys, they did a lot of, quote-unquote, damage to the Confederacy.
They certainly did, and they were on the go constantly. The key was that before long, General Canby issued them their own steamboat, their own crew, and then that opened it up for them. They, as you said in your earlier segment, they went all the way from the White River, which is central Arkansas, all the way down to New Orleans, and they were on the go. They, before the war was over, I think they'd gone through four steamboats. One of their biggest problems always was that they had to take the steamboat in for repairs. They didn't give those steamboats much time to recover. They just used them up.
Well, and, you know, the reason that steamboats were so important was they could be in one part of along one part of the river, but then they could jump on the steamboat and very quickly go quite a distance.
Absolutely.
And surprise people.
And they absolutely did. They developed one of their major tactics. They were docked most when they were docked, and Natchez, Mississippi. And they would almost always go out at night. They would slip out on their boat into the river and then head usually upstream from Natchez, and they would black out the windows, do everything they could to run quiet. Oftentimes, then they would run past their destination. St. Joseph, Louisiana, was a primary target. There were a lot of smugglers and a lot of guerrillas around St. Joseph, which is north of Vicksburg, but not too, or of Natchez, but not too far. And then they would dock north of where their destination, unload very quickly, and then ride on horseback, because they had their horses with them all the time on the steamboats, back to where they intended to do their raid. So they snuck up on a lot of people in the course of their history.
Well, and you, some of your, the descriptions of this are wonderful. You have some wonderful descriptions. And, of course, you know, you weren't dreaming these up out of you got this information from letters and all kinds of sources from those who were there.
Right, absolutely. Letters, diaries, official reports. One of the things that General Canby required, well, he did two things. First of all, he said to Lieutenant Earle, you report directly to me. That means that he bypassed a whole lot of interim officers. And he said, you report every 10 days. And it was usually by written report on what you've been doing. And in a sense, what he was saying to Earle is, and I've got your back.
Yeah.
Whenever you know, if you do encounter trouble, and Earl and his successor really did, can be stepped in, and in one case the scouts were actually in a Union stockade, mm-hmm. and can be stepped in, and I found the document, and all it says on the document, their incarceration was released by order of the commanding general. So get back on the river, boys. In that case, the funny part of that story is the man who was holding them was in Vicksburg. His name was C.C. Washburn. He went on to become governor of Wisconsin later, but for that moment, he was outranked.
Well, I'll tell you what, there were people from both the North and the South that were not happy with Isaac Earle.
Absolutely, absolutely. There were a lot of folks by 1864 who wanted to get about the business of being in business. They wanted to get at that Confederate cotton. The United States government, the Congress, had established rules for trade with areas that formerly in insurrection. Well, problem with that is it's not hard to smuggle things from beyond the area formerly in insurrection into that area. And so there was a lot of smuggling going on. And there were, as the Union Army seized plantations along the river, they were then in turn leased out again to grow cotton and ship it north. So there was... It was a real gray area over what was fair trade or permitted trade and what wasn't. And Isaac Earle's idea was to, and he did it constantly, he would first raid, seize, and then he'd sort it out.
After the fact.
He would arrest, and he did arrest somewhere, by my count, at least 200, probably more than that, Southerners for engaging in guerrilla activities, engaging in smuggling of all sorts, and as I said, he'd seize, arrest, turn them all over to the provost marshal and let them figure it out.
Yeah, and there were you might even give us a story or two of what happened on one of his experiences or one of his raids, because I thought that all those were really interesting. I mean, people, they even caught groups that, or at least in one case I remember, people coming up to the steamboat. They didn't realize it was the Northern, it was owned by or run by the Northerners, and they were Southerners. They got arrested right at the boat.
That's right. That happened in St. Joseph. They scouts had been let off further north. They had ridden into the backcountry, and the steamboat then made its way back and docked at St. Joseph to wait for them. And while they were out capturing, in that case, wagon loads of wool and about 20-some prisoners, as I remember, a few guys around St. Joseph saw this new boat, which had no markings indicating it was Union property, and the crew was not in uniform of any kind. So these guys rode up to the boat and were immediately arrested. You know, it's under, oh, ooh, this is not going to end well.
Talking today with Gordon Olson. Gordon is the author of The Notorious Isaac Earle and His Scouts, Union Soldiers, Prisoners, and Spies. Having a lot of fun talking with him. You can join in, too, if you have a question about the war and about Wisconsin. Maybe you've heard of Isaac Earle and his scouts. Maybe not. Are you familiar with what went on in the Western Front of the Civil War? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or if you'd like, you could post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comments there. Now, I talked a little bit in the first part before we were able to get through to you about Jane O'Neill.
Yes.
Talk about her, and then about her how they got together.
Oh, that's a great story. She and her family lived on a farm just east of Baton Rouge. I don't know, maybe a dozen miles, maybe not even that far as I recall, but just outside of Baton Rouge. And they were not ardent Confederates, although her brother served in the Confederate Army. And Earl was leading a group in the area and rode past the O'Neill farm and noticed a bunch of chickens running around in the yard of the farm. And he was used to seizing contraband whenever it seemed to suit his purpose, and so he decided those chickens were contraband and that they would make a great dinner for his scouts. And so he rides up into the yard, and they start grabbing chickens, and Jane O'Neill comes out of the house and gives him what for. And the interesting part of the story, as the O'Neill family tells it, he backed off for whatever reason. Now, his scouts would say because he was a gentleman, others might say that he was intimidated by this feisty woman. But in any case, the chickens stayed, but a relationship was started. She ultimately provided information. Her father had been killed by outlaws, and so there's no doubt that she did not have a great deal of love and respect for the guerrillas in the area, and passed on information that Earl used. They began to see each other. I don't have the details. Boy, what I wouldn't give for a set of letters if they had exchanged them. I had to piece it together as best I could. But without a doubt, by the end of November, or November, I should say the beginning of November, end of October of 1864, they were married in Natchez, Mississippi. I think they spent the first night together, and then he was back out on the river with the scouts. They were married, but he was not home a lot.
No, he certainly wasn't. And he, I want to get back to that in a bit. But the other, now here's a guy who, I mean, just what was he doing before this? I mean, he was a young guy. What was he, 24?
No, he wasn't even that old.
He was 24.
At the beginning of the war, he was 21.
21 years old. So
probably could write his name. But other than that, I don't think he was literate. He had a cousin, who went on to be a teacher. So I think he may have gotten a bit of schooling before, but nothing I've seen indicates that he could write anything beyond his name, and at least one of the scouts said as much, that he was schooled in the ways of the woods. He worked in lumber camps in the winter and on a farm in the summer for his uncle. His parents died when he was 10. And he's one of these guys who there's nothing to indicate that this is a great soldier waiting to be discovered, but thrust into war, into the all of the things that go on in a wartime environment, he emerges as not only a brave and courageous soldier, but as a very good leader. And that's his story. To me, the most fascinating thing is out of nowhere comes this really remarkable leader.
And the people, the guys that were under him were similarly, I mean, they weren't really professional military types. They were all Wisconsin guys that, were thrust into it.
Bunch of Wisconsin farm boys. They come from all over the state. They had formed in these little militia companies. Eight of them are from St. Croix County and that area. They were the Hudson Guards. Others from Wisconsin Dells area, one from Oconto, a couple from Sheboygan Falls. They were not from the Madison-Milwaukee area. They were from all of the small towns of Wisconsin. There's a wonderful story. Before the Scouts were formed, they were all part of the 4th Wisconsin, and they were tired of walking. They'd been marching a lot, and so they unilaterally decided they would become mounted infantry. And they went out and acquired enough horses so that they were the whole 4th Wisconsin was mounted infantry. And as they put it, they looked a little unusual. There were tall men on short horses and short men on tall horses, men on beautiful horses with a mule pack for a saddle and vice versa. Mm-hmm. One man with a side saddle is the best he could come up with, but they were all mounted, and they were determined to show and successfully show that these Wisconsin boys knew how to handle horses and could ride, and that's what they did for the rest of the war.
And really, Earl, I mean, I think there were plots just to murder him.
There were. There definitely were. He was so well known. He was the notorious Isaac Earl. Those are not my words. Those come out of a newspaper in the South. Larry, one of the really exciting things for me was I let this story go for a long time, and when I went back to it, the technology had changed dramatically, and all of a sudden, I could search the newspapers of the South and the North for keywords.
Oh, sure.
Like Isaac Earl, and I found stories of him in the Louisville paper, the New Orleans papers, the Nashville paper, the New York Times carried several stories about his exploits. Mm-hmm. None of that did I know first time around. I didn't have time to sit and read all those newspapers, if I could find them. So it really became an important story of the evolution of historical research, as well as the story of these guys and their exploits.
Well, I'm telling you, this was absolutely a fascinating book for me, and I know our listeners, many of them, are going to be taking a look at your book and enjoying it as much as I did. Gordon, thank you so much for taking time again. I apologize. I'm sorry we had the problems getting on with you at the beginning of the show, but it was great to have this half hour that we could talk. Thank you again.
Thank you, Larry. You did a great job of summary at the beginning.
All right. Well, 15 minutes is a long time to kill on the air, let me tell you. I'm certainly glad I read your book carefully. And the book is The Notorious Isaac Earl and His Scouts, Union Soldiers, Prisoners, and Spies. And again, the author, Gordon Olson, that's Olson, not Ian, Olson, The Notorious Isaac Earl and His Scouts. Read it. I think you're going to enjoy it. And thanks a lot for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.